welcome to the podcast edition of Coaching Through Chaos, bringing you what you need to succeed. And now, here is your host, Dr. Colleen Mullen.
Welcome to the Coaching Through Chaos podcast. I am your host, Dr. Colleen Mullen. Today, we're veering off our regular format. We are doing this recording live on Facebook. So my guest today, besides having a lot to share about entrepreneurship, is launching his next startup this coming weekend right here in San Diego. My guest is David Lowe. He is the founder of Quirky Co-Living. And I'm going to get into what Quirky Co-Living is all about and who it's for with Dave. But he's here because I fell in love with what the mission was and wished it was around about a decade ago when I was getting my entrepreneurial feet wet. So now I'm just so excited that he's starting something that would speak to someone like myself that was getting started in business. So I'm going to let him get into it in the conversation. But prior to Quirky, prior to doing this startup with Quirky Co-Living, David founded and grew to being sold Uber Pong. So if you've ever been in or if you've ever seen a cool and colorful ping pong paddles around at your corporate retreat, you can probably thank David for that. So I can't wait to get into this and have you all find out just what we're going to be talking about. So we're going to get right into it since you're sitting right here with me, and that's not normal for my show. So thank you, David, for being with me here on the Coaching Through Chaos podcast.
Thanks for having me, Colleen. Very excited to be on the show. Obviously podcasts and also Facebook Live. Hi to everybody this morning.
Yeah. Well, great. And I'm so excited. Like I said, I fell in love with what Quirky was and how I make so many connections with people, whether they're in San Diego or around the internet, is through Twitter. And I remember reaching out to you guys on Twitter and going, hey, what are you all about? And I want to come over and see it. So tell us what Quirky Co-Living is. And then I want to ask you so many other things about it.
Yeah, so Quirky is a co-living community for entrepreneurs, digital nomads, creatives. There'll be elements of entrepreneurship, co-living, co-working, and also travel in our Quirky communities. And we're launching a pilot house next weekend right before San Diego Startup Week. And there's going to be 7 entrepreneurs who are going to be staying with us in Golden Hill. Mm-hmm. In San Diego, and then on the back of that, we're going to be launching our first community in San Diego, probably in Little Italy, if all goes well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so you have 7 people coming to stay this weekend.
That's right.
So
yeah.
So tell us, what's the process of getting into the house for this weekend? And I think you're even calling it like a boot camp weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what would take place there?
So again, we were thinking because we want to make it a much deeper community, if you like. We realized that entrepreneurs were our kind of perfect target market, and so we started. Well, I started speaking to them and said, "Hey, how about this co-living community? What are your thoughts on it?" Mm-hmm. They loved it, but then I said, "Hey, how about we position this as a startup bootcamp weekend, as a lead into Startup Week?" And It filled in the house filled in a day.
Wow.
So it's, demand was high. And obviously, on the back of that, it was then trying to find talented, speakers, if you like, that could come in. Because again, with most houses, if you like, and living environments, you just go and you sleep in your room or whatever. You just, It's a very kind of, almost boring existence, whereas what we're trying to do is change the way people are living and allowing you to live a lot like with like-minded people. So great things happen at home, if you like.
Absolutely. I know that the energy changes so much when you have a room with people who kind of have the same passion and drive. It might be for a different project, but it's great to be around people that have that kind of energy. So what's the selection process now? And we're still focusing on this weekend, but is the selection process for getting into the house the same for the people who are going to go into the more permanent home? And are these people going to have priority to get in there?
That's a really good question, and I would say, putting a little bit of pressure on me now to answer that. they would definitely have priority, yeah, because they've been with us from, like, if they've come to the pilot and realized that, or supported us from day one, mm-hmm. absolutely, yeah, they're absolutely going to get first dibs at the first community.
So hopefully you get in.
Going back to the selection process, we're looking for people who are doing, who want to do great things with their life and change the world in some way. So if you are a startup founder, come talk to us. If you're a solo entrepreneur, if you're a digital nomad traveling the world and you're looking to do a project as you're passing through San Diego for a few months, mm-hmm. Come stay at Quirky. Because, and so the idea is that instead of you just coming and living with other people, which is what a lot of other co-living houses and communities are doing, you Quirky will kind of tailor your experience. So however long you're going to be at the house, we'll almost be building a kind of experience and schedule for you to help you succeed in that time.
That's so, like, makes it even more fascinating hearing that.
And we're trying to make it very immersive as well. So, like, from the second you walk through the door, it's, you know, you get the best welcome ever. The interior will blow you away, and then the people who you're living with will hopefully change your life.
So it's supposed to be a living experience.
Yes, experience is the key word. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Because I can't wait to see it.
So if you think of the different kind of places, if you like, so the house is the first place. Mm-hmm. The office was the second place. The third place was the coffee shop, when that whole coffee shop and the coffee movement came along. The fourth space is co-working, and so the fifth one is co-living, and it's almost like a full circle back to the home, but mm-hmm. with all of the elements of work and coffee shop and all that built back into the house. So that's what we're trying to do.
That's great. And there's so many people, as you mentioned, digital nomads. And we can talk for a second about the benefits for them of going to Quirky Co-Living, because that was really interesting to hear. But everybody's trying to find ways to work less in an office setting, you know, and so to take on, everybody's looking to have their home office, but to have it then again with all this energy behind it. And I love that you say that it's almost like tailoring some kind of like experiential program for them to go through, where they would like learn different things along the way. I assume that there's going to be it's a great networking opportunity.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about, we talk about entrepreneurs and then you talk about digital nomads, and to me they're different, but I'm not always in the same headspace to understand some of those terms, but what's the benefit of a digital nomad, like a virtual assistant, someone who can like do somebody's blogging or social promotion or things like that, a digital nomad, what's the benefit for them to be in a Quirky house?
Well, imagine that they are, for example, like, let's say that they're in social media or marketing, mm-hmm. As they come into the house, we would let the other Quirkies, who are the people staying there, we would let them know what skills they have and what they're hoping to do when they arrive. Mm-hmm. The person, the Quirky who's arriving, also knows who's going to be staying in the house, and so there's the ability to collaborate. Like, we're making it a lot easier. We're facilitating the collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so, hypothetically, that person could come in and say, hey, you know, I'm looking to get a marketing company going. Does anyone want to partner with me on this? That's one, like, start a business.
Yes.
It could be, does anybody in the house need a marketing person? And so, you know, so they could help out on the person who's staying on the Quirky's project, and so on. So it's encouraging collaboration. And there was something else I was going to say there, which slipped my mind. It'll come back.
And I know I told you, like, my funny experience of having a virtual assistant was that it was recommended by a great friend of mine in Orange County, which is about an hour north of here. And she said, oh, you should call so-and-so. So I did, and I hired her, and she was doing some work for me. And then we were Skyping one day, and she said where she lived in San Diego. And I thought she was in San Diego. Turns out she lived two blocks away from me, and we were Skyping with each other. So it was just like, okay, we need to do this in person, you know, and get rid of the virtual part of this. But it's so funny that people can exist, and we can work for each other from all over the place. Mm-hmm. And there's such interesting networking opportunities when you come into an environment like the one that you're creating. So how did you get the idea for Quirky Co-Living?
Probably, when was it? 2005, between 2005, 2006, I traveled for about a year and a half, mm-hmm. and went to 13 countries. And wow. I taught English in Japan, and I did door-to-door sales in Melbourne, in Australia. And along the way, I was very fortunate in that I could live in different living environments. Mm-hmm. And one of those was actually a capsule hotel in Japan, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but it's
capsule?
Yeah.
You're talking about the little pods that
people the little
sleep
squares
in?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
yes.
It's like imagine sleeping in a coffin, I guess. Not that I've ever slept in a coffin, but imagine sleeping in a coffin. It's kind of similar dimensions, but the space is used so well, and it's a very futuristic kind of living concept. So I got to explore different ways of living and how each different community
got fostered in those
environments.
Yeah,
exactly, yeah. And so that was kind of early inspiration. Mm-hmm. But when I moved to London when was that? I think it was the year 2000. I lived in London for about 10 years. And what I realized is that it was a very, very, like everything was kind of spread out. Mm-hmm. Everything was everywhere. And there was no kind of central place where people could kind of get together and ultimately live together.
Yeah.
And I would have died for that, because I went through kind of long periods of isolation as an entrepreneur, trying mm-hmm. to get business going, periods of depression where there wasn't that support network, mm-hmm. and people, like other entrepreneurs, weren't hearing what I was going through, and I wasn't hearing what they were going through. So
you're the only one going through
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. You do.
Right.
And so I think through that kind of pain, if you like, through that painful period and period of disconnection, all these kind of seeds were getting sown, mm-hmm. and it's come through to today,
yeah.
in 2017, where the business has been inspired enough to, and all the elements are in place to launch.
Right. And I think, and what you just touched on was like having me have flashbacks as you're talking to, you know, 2006 for myself, or 2007, I think it was when I went into practice for myself. And for as much as I have lots of friends who are in the same profession as me and lots of friends who are successful, I don't have a lot of friends that started something on their own and had an idea for a bigger vision for their business. And I remember, and it's not that that I didn't feel supported by them, but I always remember thinking nobody really gets how hard I need mm-hmm. to work.
Right.
And that when, you know, everybody wants to go out, like, and it would be hard. You want to have a social life, you want to have balance, but then, you know, but then you're like, oh my gosh, but I have 10 things I have to work on this weekend. And then your friends go, oh, but you're supposed to relax on the weekend. But people don't quite get it when you have these visions,
right.
how hard you need to work,
yep.
and that it's not a pain in the neck to do. It's something that I love to do. It's something other people who start their own things, like, we have passion behind what we're doing. But other people look at us and go, oh my gosh, she works so hard, or he works so hard, and like they never relax, and they kind of don't get the whole entrepreneurial spirit.
Right, that's
And that's why what I think was missing of that, I don't know, and maybe even with that, there could have been even a bigger move over the years. But it took me a long time to kind of take the leap with the bigger business. But
yeah.
But I just think kind of having that hub is just so great, because it's not that you always need to have people that get exactly what you're doing, but you need people that go, that can encourage you rather than going, no, you need a break.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
So,
that's it.
So it's about encouraging and fostering what's going on,
yeah.
rather than kind of maybe critiquing it or just being disconnected from what it feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think increasingly in society, people are seeing the split, and they're saying, you know, work and play, if you like.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it's because they don't like the work. So when it gets to playtime, let's say, mm-hmm. it's like, let's go out on the town, let's party all weekend, mm-hmm. because they're trying to, you know, almost forget about the fact, like forget how painful work is
right.
during the week,
right.
and almost drown in sorrows in a sense. But I think when you're doing something that you really are very passionate about, that is your life. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. but not, it's almost a healthy obsession.
Right.
And you're just living. It's just, that's your life. You know, you're just living. It's yeah. not, there isn't a work, there isn't the divide, there isn't the work and play divide.
That's
it's
right.
It's just you're living.
Right. And I always talk about it as compartmentalizing yeah. things, right? Because people will say, like, I only do certain, I see clients on 3 days a week. And some people go, oh, so you don't work for 4 days a week? I'm like, no, I work 7 days a week. Then they go, what? You work 7 days a week? Then it's like, oh, but I find time to go to the beach. I find time to go to the gym. You know, I find time to see my friends. And it's a matter of, like, we compartmentalize and weave in and out these little doses of, yeah. oh, but I got to sit at my computer and take care of this. Or I got to call people back. And, you know, and it's kind of like weaving in and out of the tasks at hand to keep things moving. Mm-hmm. So I assume that that's what the house is even like. There'll be an energy like that around the house.
Definitely, definitely. That's, yeah, energy's key. And yeah. and we have to have that almost baked into the DNA of Quirky, which
yeah.
hopefully comes through in how I communicate, how the logo will look, you know, everything, yes. the name, I mean, the name Quirky, like there's energy in there.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that the second you walk through the door, you're hit with that energy and you just, yeah. you feel that you want to be part of this. You know, it could be for the time you want to be there, or hopefully it's so contagious that you want to be there for longer and stay longer at mm-hmm. Quirky. But the grand scheme is that we go beyond San Diego and mm-hmm. we're in other cities. So, of course, you know, hypothetically, you've got to go up to LA for business, or work just naturally takes you around the country. There'll be a Quirky in every city where you can kind of tap into that energy each time and be connecting immediately mm-hmm. to that kind of entrepreneurial hive or hub, or, you know, whatever yeah. you want to call it, in those cities. And it just means that the idea is that your success is accelerated by being, you know, by kind of living with us.
Mm-hmm. Now, another question just came to mind. I thought about, like, how do you oversee a house like that? Is there an overarching, like, community? There must be some kind of community expectations. I wouldn't necessarily call them rules, but how does somebody get deemed, like, appropriate to stay? Like, do they have to do things to keep up their end of the deal of being part of the Quirky community?
There were lots of ideas that we were exploring, obviously pre-launch, and speaking to early community, like early adopters, if you like, and early community members,
yes.
and really saying, what do you need? Mm-hmm. And then building a lot of that into the first house. But of course, we'll be an organic business and brand, so that we'll always be evolving, and there'll always be something. There'll always be cool ideas getting suggested, or maybe we, you know, think of something that can keep moving us forward and keep people interested in being part of us. But I think, it's that idea of know the people. Quirkies will know kind of what they're getting into, if you mm-hmm. like, but at the same time, there is that element of they're not
of
quite
living
sure
up to it.
Well, yeah, that, but also the slight unpredictability as well.
Oh, okay.
Because, and I think that's what makes people kind of excited about living. It's sometimes mm-hmm. the not knowing.
Yes.
You know, who's going to be there, and not knowing exactly what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. So there's the element of spontaneity, I think, is exciting in life.
Sure, sure. Well. And I just think that the whole environment where people can stay for a weekend, they can stay for a couple of weeks, or they can stay for months. Is that right? They can, like, can they sign leases and stay?
We're looking at a minimum of a week, because we yeah. think that if okay. it's just a day, you can't achieve too much in a day. I mean, I guess you could if you were 24/7 or something, but a week
to get the experience would
the right amount of time. Yeah, again, uh-huh. just from early research, that's the kind of time that, mm-hmm. that people are saying as a minimum. As a max, I mean, there's people who've said you know, a year and above, but again, it's whatever your mission is and mm-hmm. and how we can help you in that time.
Yeah, I can't help but think about all the great relationships that are going to come out of the people that come through these quirky houses, and already talking yeah. as houses, because this idea, I'm sure, is going to take off.
There's a lot of really interesting people we've been talking to, and it's ranging from digital nomads to people mm-hmm. in San Diego and San Francisco and LA and New York. Mm-hmm. And they're telling us about their business ideas that they want to launch. They're either just launched or they want to launch. A lot of them are early stage. And so that's kind of prompted us, if you like, to think of, okay, well, when they come through the door, they can obviously collaborate with Quirky's in the house, but what can we do? What can we do as an organization? How can they plug immediately into the entrepreneurial ecosystem if they have, you know, only a week or it's a month? Like, how can we plug them into our network? So that's where our network's so key. And so obviously we're growing that all the time, and we're around investors and accountants and marketing people that we are screening so they don't have to. And so when they come in, if they need someone, they can come to us and say, we need a lawyer, we need whatever.
Oh,
and
amazing.
We can connect them to those people. And so, again, it's accelerating that success.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. And so now the people that are coming for the house this weekend, are they all San Diego based, or some of them coming in as part of maybe the startup week and going to, I assume there's convention going on, startup week?
That starts on Monday, yeah. We're the weekend before.
Yeah.
We've got four from San Diego and two from Tijuana.
Oh, interesting.
So we've got that.
Yeah.
I know we're close, but we've already got the kind of international reach.
Yeah. So we're very close.
And we are close, but that kind of comes back to the whole, you know, one of my kind of personal sort of goals is to, and especially in this kind of current economic and political climate, we want to build bridges, not walls.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there's the whole talk of the wall.
That's
well,
right.
How can we build a bridge between San Diego and Tijuana? And why would we want to do that? Because we'd want, you know, idea exchange, entrepreneurial exchange, you know, entrepreneurial ideas and exchange of ideas. Could people be testing a startup from like a Tijuana startup coming to San Diego to test the American market and vice versa?
Mm-hmm.
What if an American startup or nomad wants to travel to Tijuana and practice their Spanish because they're looking to get into that market? That's how we can
those relationships.
Yeah, that's how I see us kind of fitting in the co-living movement.
Now, I know when we initially talked, I said about, you know, wishing it was around a decade ago, but I was past that point now, and I thought it was for like young, like millennials coming in, envision these young, you know, these houses of like young hub of entrepreneurs. And he said that's actually not necessarily the response that you're getting. So tell me about like who's Quirky for, you know, and is there an age range or what should they expect when they come in about peers?
There's the early feedback, I guess, from a few people is it going to be a frat house or is it going to be Silicon Valley like the TV show?
That's what I was picturing.
It's neither. So it's not a frat house. But it's for people who want to really kind of use the space to, because they're serious about what they're doing and they want to succeed and they've got dreams and they want to realize them. Of course, you can go downtown and party and there's going to be, you know, there'll be all that nightlife and so on. But people who are focused, we want people who are focused. And then, what was the other part of the question? Sorry.
About like the age range.
Oh, that's right.
Like what kind of reception you're getting so far.
I would say initially a lot of millennials were loving it because it's kind of like they're loving the idea of being a digital nomad because it's the whole, the not having an anchor, not needing to buy a house because let's be honest, California prices are very high. And so there's that real appeal of it's the being able to kind of move into somewhere without a long, long lease. There's I can't think of the expression, the credit checks, like everything, all that. There's no need for all that nonsense. It's kind of a very simple application process and kind of move in. So, yeah. But as far as like age range, I mean, yeah, it's literally probably, thinking low at like as young as 18 and as old as 60.
Really?
Yeah, because there's no limit. There's no limit on like when you start, for example, you know, your entrepreneurial journey, or when you discover that you want to travel or you have the ability to travel. A lot of parents, you know, they'll go through and raise their kids and then they get to almost maybe even retirement age and they think, I'm not done.
So
in some cases, yeah, it's at that point they realize, wow, I've got all these ideas I've shelved for years. I want to start now.
Right.
It's like, great.
Yeah.
We can
we can help.
Great. So there's no one's going to feel too old or too young for this.
No. And I think it's healthy as well to have that range. Yeah. If you've just got one demographic, you're only influenced by people at that level. So it's good to have the full spectrum, I think. And that's absolutely a goal. As we go from, you know, initial communities into larger communities, that's again where we'll have that. The spectrum will be more evident because we'll just have more people there.
Sure. Yeah. What a network that's going to create as well around the country. Once, you know, you get the initial house going and then others going, people will probably even like there would be a community of quirky people around the country that probably then could connect in other ways.
Yep.
Even outside of their time spent in the quirky homes. I mean, you make these new connections.
Exactly. Well, think of the times where you've traveled, for example. You might stay in a hostel, or you might go to, you know, do like an Airbnb or home away. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the time, or you go to a co-working space if you're on business. Yes. But a lot of the times you're either on your own in the house, or you go to a co-working space or a club, mm-hmm. and you don't know anyone. And the club doesn't make any effort to introduce you to people in that community, either when you're there or before you get there. So that for me is like, they're being lazy. They're just being lazy. Mm-hmm. And they're taking the money and they're running. You know, they're not actually doing anything for that member other than giving them a desk.
Yes.
Well, go to a coffee shop then. That's your desk. Wi-Fi is good. Coffee shop's fine. You don't need the co-working space. So... yeah, I think that's the thought is wouldn't it be cool if you could go to, you know, say San Francisco now or New York and just immediately plug into that.
Right, and know community. What you're walking into,
and
right?
Know,
because
yeah,
you know the
yeah.
community and you're
yep.
part of it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But again, it's not just kind of land and kind of see what mm-hmm. happens. There's a bit more structure around it.
Yes.
And that's for us to kind of help you help you with that structure. Yeah.
Right. And so now I haven't asked about money and what it costs to be in Quirky. Where is it just, should they assume it's like an average rent for comparable to the city that the house is in?
Yeah, we're obviously researching hard to make sure that it's competitive. But at first we thought, you know, and again, speaking to Quirkies, we were saying, we think this is the kind of average. Should we go under that? Would that make you go? And they actually said the opposite. They said, you want to stand out and be seen as a premium offering. Mm-hmm. So if you were slightly above that, it would be more like, or you'd almost be seen. There's that perception of being kind of like a premium offering.
Well, yeah. And
then obviously we've got to deliver. Cause if you just go to if you go to a condo, for example, you've got a year lease, simple as that, and then all the credit checks, and then you've got to beat all the applicants to get in, and so on. It's competition. I think every single room in San Diego is, I think there's 12 people applying for every single room you go for, at least.
Wow.
I think I heard 12. Mm. So, you know, it's yeah. And then you've got the year lease. So we want it to be a little bit more flexible. But at the same time, offer something that's, you know, a fair price, but it's also a premium. It's value added. Yeah. You're getting more than just being in a room on your own.
Right.
Or a community that's where you're isolated, because a lot of condos, for example, I've lived in them. They're basically kind of glamorized projects. You know, they're you're in your little room, which is like a little cell, and that's it. There's no connection.
You go to the elevator building and not even know your neighbors.
Correct. Yes. Correct. And you get in the elevator. No one says hello. No one smiles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet the building is selling the idea of community and using community as a buzzword.
That's right.
And community is a very, very broad term.
Right.
But we're trying to create a true community but crucially a deeper community.
Yes.
It's not just community for marketing.
It's actually
it's a deeper
trying
community.
To come through and live up to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why I was thinking just in the co-working communities.
Oh,
it's the ones that actually have cultured or cultivated a community are the ones that are thriving.
Yeah.
Because there are those spaces where you just drop in and use the Wi-Fi and sit there at a desk.
Yeah.
And then there's others that provide something for the value of being in a co-working space.
Exactly.
So I can see that, you know, in the way that you're talking about structuring it and everything, just, you know, p- people, you know, you get your money's worth plus some on that end then.
We actually, you're looking at. Absolutely. We've, because Quirky's going to have elements of co-working within the house, and again, the lack of, we're removing the idea or the need for an office. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of like normally prerequisites, like, okay, a co-working space, you're going to need a desk and an office or and walls and a room. No, it can be anywhere. Basically in the house, you can work anywhere. If you want to work in a hammock, great. If you want to work on a beanbag, great. If you want to work at the kitchen table, as long as no one's eating, I guess, I'm needing the chairs.
and then you have desks for the kitchen table. People.
Yeah, exactly. And there's going to be, we're looking at minimalist design where there could be like desks that kind of come out the walls or fold down. So it's kind of, it's very, again, inspired by Japan. It's the idea of minimalism. Mm-hmm. And again, and Americans are embracing this, you know, down to tiny living and the tiny houses movement.
I just spent a year in a tiny
house. Should I say minimalist living, but tiny houses. Yeah. So Americans are kind of starting to embrace these ideas now. Mm-hmm. And so I think the timing is right for Quirky to launch and become something, you know, something special for San Diegans. Yeah. And then obviously beyond San Diego when we expand.
Right. Well, and I want to talk a little bit also about your journey through entrepreneurship, right? Because this is the current project. This is Quirky. This is what we're featuring. But you didn't just wake up here. Obviously, you came from apparently England and the UK. And but you definitely have a longer journey, as many entrepreneurs do, of trying other things. So can tell a little bit about Uber Pool, but I'm also curious because I read Uber Pong.
Uber Pong, yeah.
And thank you. And but I also I do know that you've had some failures along the way, like most entrepreneurs. And I wonder if you could speak to that also about like to let people that are watching and listening, you know, know what it's like to go through the failures.
Well, this, by the way, it's good you bring this up, because exactly what we're doing now is what I want to happen in Quirky Houses. So it's almost kind of like a sort of entrepreneurial therapy, where it's people are talking about the failures as much as their successes. Because again, you read Entrepreneur Magazine, you watch like Shark. Well, I suppose you do get failures on Shark Tank, but Entrepreneur Magazine is just the wins. It's just,
of course,
here's look at me. This I made a million. I'm valued at a billion. And it can become, you can become very disillusioned very quickly by reading a lot of those publications. So going back to your question, early failures, I tried to get a group. It was the self-publishing kind of wave, if you like. And I noticed that that people could go online, upload their photos from like Flickr at the time and wherever. Mm-hmm. And they could make a photo book. And I thought, that's cool. But social media was getting hot. So I thought, why couldn't you combine social media with self-publishing? So the idea was that was going to be born was, it was called Umento as well, which I thought was a cool name. Y-U-M-E-N-T-O. Uh-huh. So the idea of like not a memento with the me, but a U-mento with the U, but we spell it slightly differently. But anyway, I digress. So the idea was that people could pull in their social media, like photos from social media, and then put them into the book, but then invite their friends into that project. And so everybody was working on that book. Then you could print the book with every, like as a collaborative gift. That was the idea.
And that failed, because they have things like that now, but.
I know, it's like, how did it fail? It's a good idea. It failed because firstly, I put too much capital into like the sort of research and development. Well, not research, it was almost kind of like the planning phase. And then mock-ups and all this. Like I just spent too much money in the wrong areas early on. And I got a kind of consultancy involved, and they charge quite high.
Yeah.
So I did, and then it got to the point where I just, also I wasn't very technologically kind of gifted, let's say. I wasn't, you know, a CTO. And I tried to find a co-founder, and I went through a few duds on the founder front. So that was kind of where I learned what I would need to see in a founder, but also the idea of like playing to your strengths and then working out where your weak areas are and how to fill them. So it didn't launch, yeah. Mm. And that was a real, at the time, it was, I was really devastated because I thought this is, you know, a lot of people had got behind it and a lot of people were talking about it. And I didn't launch. And a sort of connection, loose friend at the time came up to me at a networking event. And a lot of people had sort of said, don't worry about it, on to the next one. And she came up and she said, there's a lot of pressure on your next one now because a lot of people have got behind you and you've not launched that and you've let them down. And it really hit me hard.
Yeah.
And I thought, and it made me really think about it. Like, mm-hmm. when you're going to go for something, like, go for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got people on board. So it's kind of like, and then I read.
Just to launch it anyway, even if it flops? Is that what you mean?
Well, by the time, if you've got enough people behind it and supporting it, mm-hmm. you've kind of got to go through with it. That's what I was sort of feeling.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's, that's what kind of, it's putting yourself in a position where you have to succeed. That's the feeling.
Right, and when you don't have a safety net
correct,
below you.
Yeah. And so that's,
is usually the yeah. time that really propels a person to kind yeah. of run forward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I know there's a lot of people who say, yeah, you've got to do the, you've got to do something like the full-time job and then be starting the thing. Yeah, that's a smart play. But I just, for me personally, that what works for me is like all in, like I'm all in or nothing. That's how I roll.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. And funny.
And that's not going to work for everyone. I will never say, because people say to me, what should I do? It's like, right. Whatever's right for you.
well, that's right, because you're all in, it might look different than what somebody else's is, or yeah. they might not be in a position to go all in.
Correct.
And they have correct. To kind of look at it. And right, we can look yep. at it and say, well, you have to, if you're going to be a risk taker, you have to be 100% in that risk. Some people just don't get it, though. Or they aren't in the place for it. So, but
that's why a lot, mm-hmm. This is what I've seen. This is why a lot of MBA, like really smart people, way smarter than me. This is why, like, I see a lot of MBA students and they come out of college and I'm like, mm-hmm. what business are you going to start? And they say, I'm not, I'm going to go into consulting or I'm going to be an employee. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
It should be a prerequisite that when you graduate as an MBA student, you should start a business. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Every single MBA mm-hmm. student has the knowledge to start their own business.
Well,
why
can
wouldn't
you imagine what kind of culture we'd have then?
Right.
Employment rates and
right.
everything
exactly.
else. If everybody
exactly.
with an MBA
exactly.
went out and started a business.
Start companies.
We'd have a whole different even way that the banks even grant finances to people because
yep.
that would be an expectation that, oh, there'd be funding for that.
Yep.
And you just start a business. Yep. I mean, that's interesting.
But I get to the, you know, I've got a few friends who've done MBAs, and so they come back on that, and so, which is fine. But I just feel like with almost sometimes too much knowledge can hurt you, and especially with people who are very educated, they know the downsides, they know the odds are yeah. basically yeah you got a one in ten chance of success.
Mm-hmm. You know the funny
by the numbers. So yeah. then they see that and think I'm not gonna do that.
Right.
Whereas I think a little bit of blind faith sometimes and almost blissful ignorance can work for you.
Right. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking of other entrepreneurial spirits that I know. And we all talk about like being so consumed with perfection. And
yes.
so when you say you spent too much time and you spent money even in the research and development or, you know, phase of your project, I think, and I have conversations with people about, you know, you have to just do something like, you know, even something we're doing here. I said, let's just set a date and launch it. Like yep. it will work. And even if it's not done and ready to go on that day, we'll have enough done for day one,
yep.
you know, and we'll have enough done for a few other days. It's just, then the feedback is, but I want it to be perfect.
Yep.
And it's like, no, it's going to be better than normal. It's
yeah.
going to be better than what other people expect. The perfection isn't going to exist and you have to let it go. And I think that when you have, I think that that might be one of the things that you'll find in your community is mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that I think just kind of the normalization that can happen of everybody just realizing how much everybody worries about things being exactly right when they launch. And really, it just has to happen, because I'm sure there are things that if we really got into the nitty gritty of what's going to happen this weekend, I'm sure there's probably a bit of panic underneath you going, well, gosh, I hope, you know, you have all these expectations. I'm sure that there are things that you're worried that aren't going to come through or that could fail this weekend. But you know, it just, you have to just do it anyway. It's launching and it is just going to do what it is.
That's it. If you, I'm human, obviously. So I'm terrified. There are times when I'm terrified about this. And terrified in doing, like, my first business, Uberpong. I got into an e-commerce business and I didn't know anything about e-commerce and tech, really. So it was, I had to find people who could help me and work out how to get early supporters and and team members, very, very early on with very little. And so it's, you have, like, that's where the passion's key, because if you can't, if you're not passionate about it, it's not going to rub off on the people who, you know, kind of want to get around that. Like you need that energy. It's an enthusiasm.
Right.
If you're just saying, like, I'm going to change the world, this is going to be amazing, like, immediately you're not going to get it.
Nobody's going to be behind that. Right.
It's not going
to
work.
You have to make them believe it's really going to happen.
You got to make them believe, but also you've got to be genuine. You can't, because again, you can go the other way and be like, this is going to be amazing. We're going to get, you know, we're going to go IPO in a week and $30 billion company in a year. No, it's the other way. It's fake. So you've got to be genuine about it.
Okay. And so why don't we talk a little bit about Uberpong, because that was your success. So, and, you know, and can you talk a bit about the journey and how you stayed motivated with a couple of failures behind? And then, you know, my understanding is you just sold it. So talk about, like, what that was like when you got to that decision about, oh, I should sell this.
So I got to, so I had the idea for Uberpong when I was in London, and I was kind of at pretty much rock bottom. Like, I just felt rock bottom. And so I was actually in a company, in a tech company in London, and I was looking out the window. It was a dreary day, and I thought, I want to get out. I want to leave England. I want to leave London. I'm done. Weather's killing me. It's like middle of summer as well. Yeah, right. And but that company had a ping pong table, and that was the highlight of my day, playing on there. But I looked across and I saw two people playing who couldn't have been more different. But they're playing with the same paddles, same, you know, same color ball, same table. Like, it's all generic. And so that was a little bit of a light bulb where I said, okay, that needs to change. That's a sport. It needs to change. So that was just the first idea that came into my head. And then I kind of researched it, realized it, the game was invented, I think, in 1896 in London, actually, in England. And I thought, yeah, I'm gonna shake up this
revolutionized ping pong,
boring stale game of table tennis. And then I thought, but I'm gonna do it in the States, because that's where they're gonna love to see the disruption and the change. They're gonna embrace that more. And so, yeah, it became
Uberpong. And we like quirky gimmicks. So.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So
bring it to the States. We'll buy it.
So I thought, I came to Austin with that idea in my head, and I launched the Kickstarter campaign of, I think it was July 2012. And within a month, we'd raised over $10,000. So, yeah, 30 days, we'd raised just over $10,000. That allowed me to build a very basic website, get everything set up. I had some amazing help early on and supporters, and it launched. It launched eventually after we'd fulfilled the Kickstarter campaign and the first batch. It launched in November 2012, and within 2 years, you know, we were on the field at Dodger Stadium in LA with the LA Dodgers, directing a celebrity ping pong tournament on the field. Yeah, and Jimmy Kimmel was hosting, so it was kind
fun.
So that was cool. That was very cool. But the coolest thing ever was back in England, you know, in say 2010, when 2011, my dream was to come to the US, start a brand or launch a brand, and have it on the Jumbotron at a basketball game, and have my brand on there. That was the dream. And I'm walking up from the player, whatever it is, like the VIP player locker room for the Dodgers, and I'm walking up the ramp and I see Clayton Kershaw getting interviewed, who's their like MVP pitcher, and something catches my eye, sort of just above him, the film crew, and it was Uberpong. It was the Uberpong bright orange logo on the advertising screens all the way around the stadium.
Wow, what a ballpark. Moment.
So that was like, that was it. That was like,
you knew job done. Made it. You knew you got a good one.
Yeah. So people talk about like money and exits and all this. That for me, it was like, that it wasn't the Jumbotron, but it was close.
Yeah, but it was the very, moments very along close. The way that are like, that to you, that was, I mean, the money that you make is the stuff that helps you sustain your life and grow other things. But it's those moments that just touch you that you're like, oh my gosh, like this is really cool that this happened. That's what keeps everybody going when you're doing your own thing and creating something on your own is when you see those other ways that it's getting recognized.
That was really cool. And then we got on the scoreboard as well. That was the other one. So it was just, but that was like, I'm doing something right here, and I can do this. And because you say you're an entrepreneur, but there's got to be a defining moment. It's like anything, you know.
Well,
your
you life. Have to have created something.
Yeah, that was very much a defining moment because I thought I am an entrepreneur here, and I'm doing something right that people are in. It's changing something.
And that happened fast. I mean, that was all in 2012.
No, that was within 2 years.
Within 2 years.
Yeah. So I think almost exactly 2 years, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did you say? Where you said you didn't come out of the tech world. What were you doing before? Because, you know, you had some kind of career before. How did you, you know, whatever it was, I guess, doesn't even matter all that much, but I'm curious. But I'm more curious about how you made that leap to go. And you said, it was working at that place in London and wanting to get out of London, maybe. Had you always, though, seen yourself as someone who was going to leave the corporate world and get out?
Oh, yeah. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I just didn't. I don't know why, but I just didn't have the confidence when I was younger that I do now. Mm-hmm. Just didn't have it. And I think that probably stemmed from not doing very well at school. That whereas most people getting good grades and there's that natural confidence there to go into jobs and on a high, I was flagging, and that was probably it. But I'd say, where did I start? I mean, I started my dad's business. He ran a successful business for like 30 years before selling that. So I learned a bit about business from him and being in that in the northwest of England, and then went down to London and just did multiple things. You know, I did sales, like started really in telesales, then advertising sales, got into recruitment briefly. I was really bad at that. But the thing that I found in each job is I'd learn it quite quickly. I'd learn the job quite quickly, hit the ceiling, and then know that you're a number, you're in line. So even though you've hit the ceiling and you know you want to go higher and smash through it, you just have to wait. It's a waiting game, and you wait for the promotion. And I was turned down a few times for promotions when I knew I was the right guy. I knew it. And my vision was bigger. Like, I just, again, the way I was thinking was just beyond anyone at my level. But they went with the next guy, and that got me annoyed.
Yeah.
It's very, very...
I relate to some of that in the end of my agency work life.
I
thought, I'm never going through this again. And I cried a day and realized the next time I opened my door and I see a client, I was going to make triple what I was making at the agency. And I thought, I'll get over this and just get on with it.
A lot of corporations also don't embrace entrepreneurs or the entrepreneurial mindset.
Well, no, you have to. It's
outside of the...
You have to stay in the conformed box. Lines of the rules.
Yeah, right.
Anytime you start going, hey, what if we do this? Or what if we do this? Have you tried that? People go, no, we do it this way. And then you go, it's not meant to grow.
No. And too many times I was suggesting things to bosses and they were saying, we'll have a board meeting and discuss it. And I chase it hard and say, so you had the board meeting? What did they say? And then of course they'd say, we're not going to go ahead with it this time, meaning they hadn't even brought it up.
You know,
it's just a polite way of saying, you know.
Just appeasing. Ignored it. Appeasing.
Yeah, exactly.
And placating.
So I thought, how can I take those ideas and feelings and whatever, how can I apply them? And I then realized that that was the calling. It's like I can apply them in, as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I am
applying
them, applying those thoughts, ideas.
Right. Now you have the freedom to do all of that. So, David, anything else that you'd love to share with us? Or have we covered everything you want us to know about Quirky?
Can I drop the website?
Certainly.
No pressure.
That's what I'm going to ask. Everybody can reach you as well. So.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say we've got a teaser page, which is quirky.co. That's quirky.co. It's very basic at the moment, but add your email and we'll let you know when we're launching. We're on social media across Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we're at Quirky Co-Living. QWERKYCOLIVING. And then the pilot house is this weekend, and we're obviously fully booked for that. If you're an entrepreneur, digital nomad, creative, please talk to us. Reach out. hi@quirkycoliving.com if you want to apply to be part of the first house that's launching, or just join the community if you're in another city. And also we're going to be building programming into the house. So if you're a speaker and you've got like a really inspirational talk, we'll be doing quirky talks, a bit like TED, but even more kind of quirky. So if there's kind of a talk you do, or you've got a really compelling and inspiring subject you want to talk about, reach out, because we want you to talk to the house. And obviously we'll be Facebook living and, you know, filming all this as well, so it'll be a good platform for the speakers as well. And then beyond that, if you want to partner with us, like if you're in another city, if you're in San Diego and you've got a building or a big house where we could basically plug our community into and operate out of there and call it home, let us know. And then that's about it, I think.
Great. Yeah, thank you. And I realized that I cut off that story before we got to the point that you sold Uber Pond.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so you want to give us the highlight of that, because that is the entrepreneurial goal, is that somebody says, hey, I want to throw all this money at your business and buy it from you because I can grow it.
It's the worst and the best day of my life.
Oh.
In the same day, because I've got a daughter, but you don't know, like, I've never had to sort of give a child up for adoption, but that's how it feels. That's the feeling. Like, you're giving it up and you're giving it away, and you're very, very close to it. Like, there's a lot of love and sweat equity, let's say, and your emotional connection to the brand.
So
it's very, very difficult
to do,
to give it up. But at the same time, it's a beautiful full circle and a complete circle that's made, formed, because you've gone from nothing and you're basically exiting. And so, it's just, and then you start again.
Yes.
Obviously, I'm starting with Quirky. So it's kind of a nice, it's a nice way to end one chapter and start another. So it now feels good in retrospect. And the people who, you know, acquired us, I think they're going to do an amazing job. And that's why I sold to them, because they're going to take it, they're going to make it even bigger. I've given it a good foundation, but they're going to take it to the next level.
That's wonderful and nice that you can have that and kind of know that you sold it to people with the integrity behind what you wanted for the brand.
Yes.
And that
very
they're
important.
Going to, right, that they're going to foster it in a way that kind of still keeps with your initial vision of what it was going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you get the big brand, I won't name any big companies, but you get the big ones who acquire, you know, social networks, and they've no idea. They run it, they'll spend, you know, $1 billion and they'll run it into the ground in a few months because they just don't have any idea. So that legacy's dead. Mm-hmm. If you're the founder, so I like the idea of it being taken to the next level and continuing. So,
and that word legacy is a great thing, especially when you're in business for yourself. You want to leave your mark on the world.
That's
and it might be through a quirky business like Uber Pong, or it might be through a co-living community like Quirky Co-Living. So I want to thank you so much, David, for being on the
Thanks
show
for
with
me.
So David Lowe the founder of Quirky Co-Living. And we're just going to wrap up the podcast here. So let us know what you think about what David's doing, about what we're doing here at the Coaching Through Chaos podcast. And for those that have been listening, that have been faithful followers, I just want to touch base about the fact that we've kind of slowed down how much we're producing, because I'm also hosting two other shows right now, and I think you'll benefit from hearing from them as well. One's the funny and fun Shrink to Shrink on Film, where we take one movie a month and break it apart by scenes and psychobabble about it. And we take that comes out on the last day of every month. This month for Father's Day, we're doing the old film Parenthood. For Mother's Day, we did Mommy Dearest, and that one was a lot of fun. But check out the Trainwreck episode with Amy Schumer. That was probably one of my favorite ones. So we have that. And then I'll also be launching the brand new San Diego Movers and Shakers show with Tracy Lynn Cowan as my co-host. And we are going to be talking to people here in San Diego who are doing exceptional things to help others live exceptional lives. And we can't wait to share that with you. That's going to launch officially in July. You can reach out to me on, you know that I love to communicate with you all on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Colleen Mullen. And on Facebook, you can find me at facebook.com/Dr. Colleen Mullen. And friend me, chime in, watch some of our live feeds. I do a live video every Tuesday at 3:30 Pacific time and pick a little topic, give you a few tips on that topic for the week. So before I go, I want to thank, as always, Dr. B for my audio engineering and BennettSullivanMusic.com for my theme music. So until next time, I'm your host, Dr. Colleen Mullen, and hoping that you have a great day. And if you've got chaos in your life, I hope you're finding your way through it. Take care.